Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is your good friend, the very esteemed and well-travelled Clarence Copernicus Cloverleaf, welcoming you to another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon. You can always feel free to call in at 602-753-1883 to ask a question to the host or any of his well-established guests. Just please remember when calling in to be on your best behavior. This is a G-rated show, you know. Hey, that was a wicked rhyme! Anywho, just be sure to be kind and courteous. Now, on to the main event!
Hey, this is actress Brianna Denski. You may know me best as playing June in the film Wonder Park. And you're listening to Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. And now, another exciting episode in the adventures of Superman.
Wow, that is so crazy to hear that in full before the show, but we are back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I'm the host of the most, Jimmy Falcon, absolutely honored to be welcoming Greg Moffat to the show, actor. I mean, this guy has done it all. He was a child actor, retired from the screen when he reached his early teens, but he was a professional bowler, served time with Uncle Sam, worked for several dealers, years as a dealer in Las Vegas, and so much other things I'm sure we'll hear about. How's it going, Greg? All right. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
All righty. Well, I was talking and gave you this fantastic intro, so I'm going to have to do it over again because I had you on hold and I didn't realize it. But we are welcoming actor Greg Moffat to the show. He has been a longtime child actor, but definitely has done some other cool stuff. Professional bowler, served time with Uncle Sam, worked for several years as a dealer in Las Vegas and other things we may hear about today. How are you, Greg?
I'm just fine, and thank you for your interest in my somewhat limited career in Tinseltown.
Well, you know, looking back, a lot of the films you were in were some time ago, years before I was even thought of, I'm sure, and sadly a lot of those leading actors and a lot of the middle ones as well are unfortunately not with us anymore, so I think you've been, you know, still be around and still be kicking. It's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah, it's been an interesting life. If you, you know, people say, you know, what was it like growing up in a show business family? And in a lot of ways, I don't know quite how to answer the question because it's how I grew up. You know, you know, I mean, I didn't know any other that there were other options available. So.
That's amazing, though, to think about, you know, from an outsider's standpoint, not growing up in that kind of family and being on the farm. It's kind of interesting to think that that was all you would know. Even if maybe you didn't have aspirations to do it, you'd probably fall into it.
No, well, in our case, both my mom and my dad came to Hollywood for the opportunity to perform. And both of them did get the opportunity on several occasions. My dad continued to throughout his life, but my mom's career was cut short by children. First, my older sister, Sharon, who had a significant career in Hollywood. At that point, mom became a stage mom, as they call them. And it had to be, you know, you couldn't be on the set as a juvenile without supervision, typically parental supervision. And then I came along a few years later, and Sharon got her first shot when she was 11 months old, and I was 4.
Wow.
So it wasn't so much of an individual choice for either one of us to be involved in the business. It was just the way things were.
Well, I'm sure, especially maybe starting out, did you have a hard time remembering your lines? I know as a kid, at least, and even still now, I don't think I could remember a script and certain sets of dialogue. It had to be maybe difficult more when you were younger.
Well, I was blessed in a variety of ways. My mom was, you know, in those days, if you got through high school, you had a heck of an education without even considering going to college. And my mom was a pretty good teacher. And actually, I learned to read long before I was in school. We'd get out the Sunday funnies. And in those days in Los Angeles, there was a guy who read the funnies to you from the newspaper on the radio with sound effects and stuff to make it more entertaining. But my mom used it as a way to teach me to read so I could hear the words and read them at the same time. And I got fairly proficient, enough so that when I was about maybe 4, I started running lines with my sister. She had a lot of work through those days, and mom couldn't always do it, and she knew I could read, and a lot of it was just picking up cues. But she would, my mom would help me with how to phrase things, how to ask questions, how to read the lines, even though they weren't mine. So when it came my turn, reading the lines wasn't much trouble, and I'd been memorizing lines working with Sharon, so the memory wasn't ever really an issue. Sometimes when a director would decide to change a line, that would be a hassle because I'd have it memorized the other way. But I don't remember too many problems with reading my lines.
Well, that's great. It seemed like you had some training, rather if you called it training or not, but going over with those lines with your sister had to have helped you immensely in reading the scripts.
There's no doubt. Yeah, that's absolutely true. There was an incident, however, when I worked on the Adventures of Superman. There is a scene in the episode where Superman lands at the farm that my mom and I are on, and I'm there to greet him. You know, you can hear the sound effects and of him flying in. And we had rehearsed the scene, but we hadn't rehearsed the scene the way George was going to do it. He jumped into the scene from the second or third step of a ladder that was out of the camera's view, and we hadn't done the rehearsal that way. We just stood and read the line, you know, did the dialogue. And when he jumped in, I was completely startled. And it was take two very quickly. I did get it right on the second take.
Yeah, I know, you know, a lot of the stuff I've read about George Reeves, of course, he had a wonderful acting career, but nowadays people look back on the controversialness of his death, being that we're looking back now and not necessarily when you're on the set. What's your opinions on the whole thing?
You know, I don't think anybody that's alive today can tell you with any certainty what did or didn't happen. He had an interesting life. He was affiliated with interesting people at an interesting time in Hollywood's history. And I read the notices about suicide, and I just didn't believe him. I was, you know, by the time he passed, I was 15 or 16. I guess it was probably 58 or 59 when he died. I'm not sure about the year, but
yeah,
around 59. There. And my memories of working with George are, I mean, he was a wonderful guy, welcoming, helpful, and seemed to be a caring, you know, nice guy, always, not always smiling, but pretty much, you know, in a good mood working. And so I never saw any of the darkness in his personal life. And I guess there was some. So whether he was killed or committed suicide, as I say, I don't think anybody alive today knows with certainty. And the people who do know, who could have shed light on it years later, were probably scared to death of the possibilities, depending on what the truth actually was. So who knows? I can't add anything to the discussions that are out there.
Well, I just thought it was, you know, curious. I didn't understand until maybe after I seen one of these biographies on him that there was that big of a discussion, whether it was accidental or whether it was suicide or whether it was murder. But he did seem to do a lot for children, especially cutting out the logo from his Superman outfit and giving it away and little things
yeah.
like that. I think overall he must have been a really great guy. But everyone has issues.
That's my experience with him. He was actually, I didn't have any really negative experiences with any of the actors and actresses that I worked with. I learned a lot of language that maybe most kids of my age weren't exposed to in those days. Beyond that, the experience was pretty rewarding.
Yeah, outside of Superman, I was curious about Let's Dance, of course, with Betty Hudson and Fred Astaire, the iconic Fred Astaire. What was that experience like, getting to work with two legends like that?
They were both amazing. I had just turned six when we began filming Let's Dance. And I knew who Fred was, and I knew who Betty was. Actually, Betty and my mom became fast friends and remained so until my mom passed away in the late 80s. Betty outlived her by another 20 years or thereabouts. But the opportunity to work with them and how helpful they were, how helpful the whole crew was. You know, if you look through the cast of that movie, there are a ton of, I don't know if you call them famous B actors, but well known probably is the best phrase to use. A lot of people who had worked in a lot of stuff and really knew their stuff, and all of them were helpful in my performance, without a doubt. Fred and Betty had great senses of humor, and there's a clip on YouTube of Fred reading me the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. It's an amazing video, and he winds up singing and dancing the story, and I wound up sound asleep at the end of the scene. He's reading me the story as I go to bed at night. It's a wonderful clip, and it demonstrates a lot about how the motion picture was made and the attitudes of the people on the set. I don't remember arguments. You know, they may have happened up in the suites when they were showing the dailies, but I never got to see the dailies. My mom had a strict rule. Sharon and I could never see what we'd done on film. We couldn't go see the finished product.
I was going to say, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I mean, and it remained that way until we were both grown up. And there are still pieces of Sharon's work that she's never seen. I think, well, I haven't ever seen the full cut on Two Gun Lady. I've seen Robot Monster more times than I'd care to admit. and the Superman episode, of course. I was invited to a festival 10 or 12 years ago in Memphis. Was the first time I'd ever been to a film festival. And met a lot of people who were just huge fans of Superman and the original episodes. And they invited me into a group that they had, maybe 3,000-4,000 people who share facts and figures about everything George. In Let's Dance, it was fun to watch how things worked and got put together. There's a long singing and dance sequence between Fred and Betty, and a lot of stuff I didn't see. They actually recorded the music not during the shot. They did the 40s version of lip syncing during the take, and they shot it from four different angles or with four different cameras all at the same time on different parts of the set and playing the track, the music track in the background. That was kind of an eye-opener for me in terms of how motion pictures are put together. Almost like a process stage, but not quite the same. It was definitely a bonus. We finished probably everything in August or early September of that year. And Christmas rolled around, and the day before Christmas, early in the morning, there was a knock on the door, and it was a delivery of a bicycle from Fred for me for Merry Christmas. And he bought me a 20-inch bike, which fit just fine. It was a great little Schwinn. Well, later that day, there was another knock on the door, and it was another bicycle from Betty for me for Christmas. Only it was a bike I wouldn't be able to ride for another 5 or 6 years. It was a 26-inch bike, and Sharon wound up riding it as a result, because she could get on it, actually reach the pedals from the seat, and I couldn't.
Oh my God.
They were wonderful people. They really were.
That is always nice to hear. I know that the Golden Age has a lot of love and respect for it to this day. And I think it's really great that you were able to start with all these wonderful actors and actresses. And I guess I'd feel left out or remiss if I didn't bring up Robot Monster, which you co-starred in 1953, which I've read to be called one of the worst films or worst B films of all time, along the lines of that.
I've heard that it's in everybody's top 10 list of worst movies ever made. I sometimes wonder how valuable that is as a pointer to my career to be remembered for that film. but it was fun. We had a good time. It was short. I don't think we shot maybe 4.5-5 days. Almost all of it in the canyon where the exteriors were shot. Virtually all of it was an exterior shoot. And it was a warm spring in the Hollywood Hills. Trying to remember the name of the canyon. Benedict. No, not Benedict Canyon. It'll come to me. Maybe. My memory is becoming a little more shot as time goes by as well. So, but actually, there are three actors from that motion picture that I'm aware of that are still alive. Myself and Claudia Barrett. She was the love interest. And Pam, I'm trying to remember her last name, is... the girl that played my little sister in the film. She's still alive, living up in the San Francisco area. And as I understand it, it was the only film she ever made. And she has refused on several occasions to go be interviewed about it. So.
Wow. Yeah, I think looking back now, I can see why it has so much appreciation, especially if you look at independent filmmakers these days. It seems like that's the kind of thing they go for. It might be cheesy, but it's memorable and funny at sometimes. But I think sometimes the effects, not using so much money towards something and making a shorter film, can pay off in the long run.
I got a phone call about 3 years ago from a fellow named Rich Silverman in Hollywood, an aspiring director and producer. And he said he was putting together a stage play of Robot Monster, the musical. and invited me to the grand opening. And so my wife and I went down. It was pretty funny, pretty funny.
Well, I noticed, I noticed that at least on, the internet's not always trusting, but it said you're in a film in production?
Now?
Yes. I'm guessing that's...
Not unless there's somebody following me around with a chest cam taking pictures.
Maybe it's a secret shoot. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, because I was going to ask you why you never decided to return to acting, but then I see this when I was getting the thing together for a drama called High School Confidential about school shootings. It says you're playing an officer, so I was like, that sounds interesting.
I saw that that collage you did for the advertisement for this show. It was pretty interesting. I saw some pictures I'd never seen before in that. You did some work hunting that stuff down. But I don't know anything about High School Confidential at all. So if there might be another Greg Moffat or Gregory Moffat out there working, but it ain't me, babe.
Well, I know you had done a lot of things besides acting, and I guess I was curious about some of those as well.
Well, when my career actually stopped, when we moved out of the Los Angeles area, we moved to Anaheim, which was about 40 miles south of L.A.,
oh, yeah.
And juveniles at that time typically were interviewed for parts at after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we lived right off the Santa Ana Freeway, which was two lanes back and forth, and there were three or four major industries along the freeway that did shift work, did day shift, swing shift, graveyard. And swing shift usually changed somewhere between 3 and 4. And it was virtually impossible for me to make an interview at a reasonable time from Anaheim in the afternoon after school. So I wasn't, I guess, sufficiently bitten by the acting bug to pursue it later on. It was just what I used to do and pretty much has remained that way throughout my life.
Well, that is pretty neat. You did seem to do a lot of neat things. Being in the Army had to be something pretty interesting, because I don't think I could do it, honestly.
Well, I got drafted. I didn't have a lot of choice. It was that or go to Leavenworth and make small rocks from big ones, you know. It was not a very interesting choice for me. So I went in. I was in 1965. I was in Vietnam in early 66 to early 67, and I got out of the service after my 2-year stint in September of 67. And I had moved to Las Vegas. That's ultimately where I got drafted from, and that's where I went back to when I left the service. And continued her career in the casino business for another 10 years before I came back to California.
Casino had to be pretty interesting work. I've been in a couple, and with the no clocks, and it's always pretty dark and almost just play the games, and that's it. And keep playing until you can't play anymore.
I was there at an interesting time. There's no secret that the various crime families from the East were the financial backers of the casinos and those that received the rewards from the casinos from the time they started building the big hotels out there in the late 40s. I got a chance to watch it begin to change. When I left, the Dunes Hotel had gone public with its stock. Been taken over by a company called, if I remember right, Continental Connectors. And it turned out that the board at Continental Connectors was populated with sons and nephews and grandchildren of those same families. So they went public to get the IRS and the feds out of their face and to solve some employee issues that they had, union issues and such. And now, of course, if the families are still involved, and I wouldn't discount the possibility that they are, they're well in the background because everything now is corporate in Vegas. But I did deal to some interesting people. I saw some very strange things happen. Hello?
Yeah, keep going. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I dealt to Telly Savalas for a long time one night at the Golden Nugget. I dealt to an Arab oil sheik at the Dunes Hotel for across 2 days, probably 3.5-4 hours. They took all the limits off for him. He could bet whatever he wanted. It was an interesting time because the bosses could do anything they basically wanted to, as long as they stayed within the gaming regulations. You know, cheaters were not treated very well in those days when they were caught on games. There was a fellow at the Golden Nugget. No, at Binion's at the horse show, they caught a dealer and a player flashing card symbols back and forth, and they took both of them downstairs. They closed the game, took the two of them downstairs, and you could hear some rather, how do I want to say this? Painful cries coming from down below. The dealer never worked again, and I don't know what happened to the cheater on the other side of the table, but neither one of them came out of the situation very well.
Oh, my goodness. I think that I know no one listening could actually hear the countdown. I like to call it the evil British woman doing the countdown. That's just on our end. But you go, I don't know how to describe it. She goes, 10 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know if that was the end of the show or not. So,
well, that was the end of the live program, and it's going into archive now, but we did not get cut off. I don't know if you had anything else you'd like to add, but it was really nice talking with you today, Greg.
If you have any other questions for me, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, it's been a pleasure. I thank you. Thank you much, Jerry.
Yeah, either one counts. I guess the last one I always like to ask is, what does the future hold for you? What does your day keep you busy with these days?
Oh, well, currently, surprisingly enough, at my age, we just bought a new home. So I'm filling boxes, getting ready to move, hopefully for the last time in my life. I play a little golf. I help out at the Veterans Clinic from time to time. There are a lot of guys over there who need transportation and need companionship, and I'm still mobile enough to be able to help in those areas. So,
That is really nice to give back, and I'm sure it helps you feel really well, good as well.
Well, are you familiar with Honor Flights? Have you heard?
Yes, I am. Yes, in Washington.
I was fortunate enough to be invited on one a year ago.
And, wow.
Met some great guys. We had a great time. It's a whirlwind trip. It was just an amazing 3 days. It really was. And although I'd been helping at the clinic for several years before that, I heard stories and talked to guys and remembered things that maybe I'd put out of my mind a long time ago that kind of filled in some blanks, and it was good for me in a whole lot of levels. And so I help at Honor Flight from time to time as well. So
that is wonderful. That is really great that you're still continuing to give back and help out. And I think you're a great guy, and it's wonderful to have talked to you today. It was really an honor.
Well, again, thank you for your interest. And I hope you had lots of listeners. I had a lot of people trying to figure out how to hear the show. I hope they all got the chance.
I hope so as well. I will I'll post the link on your page for anyone who may have missed it after we are finished recording. It goes into the archives.
Thank you so much.
No problem, Greg. Thanks again. Have a great night.
You too. Thanks, Jimmy. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All righty, guys. We got a couple of shows coming up. I really need to get into the planning stages for some more things. But as far as tomorrow goes, we're scheduled to be welcoming 3-time NWA World Tag Team Champion, former TNA superstar, as seen in WWE, the Natural Chase Stevens. Give me a nice talk and wrestling. It's always a good time. On September 19th, we welcome actor and filmmaker Wyatt Weed. He played the Boar Predator in Predator 2 and has done some really awesome other things in his career. He's going to be appearing at the 2019 Dark History and Horror Con. And, of course, the 2019 Dark History Horror Con is October 26th and 27th, 2019, at the City Center in Champaign, Illinois. Visit dhhcon.com for more info and up-to-date ticket information. There's going to be some awesome guests there. He is still promoting, I think, maybe once or twice a week he's letting out who's all going to be there. So don't take it from me. Check it out yourself, and we hope to see you. Big thanks again to Greg Moffitt, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.